Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 10, entitled Battle Between the Demigods and Vitrasura, text 17 to 33. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 33 on the board. Prav samatha viha mrityu durapau. Prav samatha viha mrityu durapau. Yad Brahma Sandharanya Chitasu Kalibaram Yoga Rato Vichayad Kalivaram Yoga Rato Vichayan Yad Akvan Hirdbira Sahi Nivritta Yad Akvan Hirdbira Sahi Nivritta Chau Samatha Viha Mityur Durapau Yat Brahma Sandharanya Chitasu Kalibaram Yoga Rato Vichayan Yarakrani Vira Shahi Nivrita Samatha Viha Mityu Dorapau Yad Brahma Sandharanya Chitasu Kalibaram Yoga Rato Vichayan Yad Agrani Vira Shahi Nivrita Samatha Viha Mityu Durapau Yad Brahma Sandharanya Chitasu Kalibaram Yoga Rato Vichayat
Thank you.
Mata ji. Wow. Two. Samatao. Approved by Shastra and great personalities. Iha. In this world. Mritya. Mrityu. Deaths. Durapau. Extremely rare. Yat. Which. Brahma Sandharanya, with concentration on Brahman, Paramatma or Parabrahman, Krishna, Jitta Aso, controlling the mind and senses, Kalevaram, the body, Yoga Rataha, being engaged in the performance of yoga. Vichahyat, one may leave, yat, which, agrani, taking the lead, virashai, on the battlefield, anivrittaha, not turning back. Translations, there are two ways to meet a glorious death, and both are very rare. One is to die after performing mystic yoga, especially bhakti yoga, by which one can control the mind and the living force and die absorbed in thoughts, in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The second is to die on the battlefield, leading the army and never showing one's back. These two kinds of deaths are recommended in the Shastras as glorious. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purpose of the 6th canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Battle Between the Demigods and Vrittasura. I'll read from 17 and 18. O King, when all the Asuras came onto the battlefield, headed by Vrittasura, they saw King Indra carrying the thunderbolt, and surrounded by the Rudras, Vashus, Adityas, Ashvini Kumaras, Pitas, Vahines, Maruts, Ribhus, Sadhyas, and the Vishvadevas. Surrounded by his company, Indra shone so brightly that his effulgence was intolerable to the demons. Many hundreds and thousands of demons, demi-demons, Yakshasas, Rakshasas, man-eaters, and others, headed by Shumali and Mali, resisted the armies of King Indra, which even death personified cannot easily overcome. Among the demons were Namuchi, Sambara, Anarva, Dimurdha, Rishabha, Asura, Hayagriva, Sankushira, Vrippachiti, Ayomukha, Paloma, Vrishaparva, Praheti, Heti, and Utkala. Roaring tumultuously and fearlessly like lions, these invincible demons, all dressed in golden ornaments, gave pain to the demigods with their weapons like clubs, bludgeons, arrows, barbed darts, mallets, and lances. armed with lances, tridents, axes, swords, and other weapons like Satagnis and Bhushundis, the demons attacked from different directions and scattered all the chiefs of the demigods' armies. As the stars in the sky cannot be seen when covered by dense clouds, the demigods, being completely covered by networks of arrows falling upon them one after another, could not be seen. The shower of various weapons and arrows released to kill the soldiers of the demigods did not reach them because the demigods, acting quickly, cut the weapons into thousands of pieces in the sky. As their weapons and mantras decreased, the demons began showering mountain peaks, trees, and stones upon the demigods' soldiers. But the demigods were so powerful and expert that they nullified all these weapons by breaking them to pieces in the sky as before. When the soldiers of the demons commanded by Vritrasura saw that the soldiers of King Indra were quite well, having not been injured at all by their volleys of weapons, not even by the trees, stones, and mountain peaks, the demons were very much afraid. When an insignificant persons use rough words to cast false angry accusations at saintly persons, their fruitless words do not disturb the great personalities. Similarly, all the efforts of the demons against the demigods who were favorably situated under the protection of Krishna were futile. The Asuras, who are never devotees of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, lost their pride in fighting. When they found all their endeavors futile, leaving aside their leader, even in the very beginning of the fight, they decided to flee because all their prowess had been taken away by the enemy. Seeing his army broken and all the Asuras, even those known as great heroes, fleeing the battlefield out of intense fear, Vritrasura, who was truly a great-minded hero, smiled and spoke the following words. According to his position and the time and circumstances, Vritrasura, the hero among heroes, spoke words that were much to be appreciated by thoughtful men. He called out to the heroes of the demons, O Vipra Chitti, O Namuchi, O Paloma, O Maya, O Anarva, and Sambara, please hear me and do not flee. Vritrasura said, all living entities who have taken birth in this material world must die. Surely no one in this world has found any means to be saved from death. Even Providence has not provided a means to escape it. Under the circumstances, death being inevitable, if one can gain promotion to the higher planetary systems and be always celebrated here by dying a suitable death, what man will not accept such a glorious death? If by dying one can be elevated to the higher planetary systems and be ever famous after his death, who is so foolish that he will refuse such a glorious death? Similar advice was also given by Krishna to Arjuna. My dear Arjuna, the Lord said, do not desist from fighting. If you gain victory in the fight, you will enjoy a kingdom. And even if you die, you will be elevated to the heavenly planets. Everyone should be ready to die when performing glorious deeds. A glorious person is not meant to meet death like cats and dogs. There are two ways to meet a glorious death, and both are very rare. One is to die after performing mystic yoga, especially bhakti yoga, by which one can control the mind and living force and die absorbed in the thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The second is to die on the battlefield, leading the army and never showing one's back. These two kinds of death are recommended in the Shastras as glorious. End of purple chapter. Om Agyanantaranda Shayanan Sarakaya Chakshavarmitam Tasma Shri Gurave Nama Nama Om Vishnu Vadaya Krishna Purishthaya Bhutare Smati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tidamini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gurvani Pacharine Nevishesha Shandavari Pastarizatharini Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It is Bhaktisara, the hero, he says, amongst heroes. Although he was asura, I mean a real asura, not like, you know, like Prahlad, who was born in an Asuric family, and he was a very sweet devotee. This one is a real demon, huge, big face and teeth, pointed teeth and red hair, and, you know, a real demon. But he's actually a very pure devotee. The Srimad Bhagavatam is glorified, they glorify the Bhagavatam as this Srimad Bhagavatam, this Purana, which contains the story of Vritrasura. So the people recognize the Bhagavatam for this particular incident in the Srimad Bhagavatam of the devotee Vritrasura. He's a created demon. Of course, in his previous birth, he was a great devotee. Made an offense, but he's just continuing, and he's in the next chapter. He'll be telling about the battle and what's going on in the battle and what the conversation is, which is very, very enlightening, because he's going to put everyone. He's going to embarrass everyone on the battlefield, just like now he's embarrassing all the leaders of the demons. Why are you running away? Don't you know? If you die, you get eternal fame in the heavenly planets. What more do you want? Who could resist such a thing? and if we win, well, then we enjoy the sovereignty over the planets. So no loss there. So don't run away. And it is to be noted that when they all fled because their weapons proved useless, Vritrasura, before he spoke, he smiled. So it's an intense, you know, just like Krishna was smiling on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. It's a very intense situation, a battlefield. You know, good chance you're going to lose your life. It's a very, very intense situation as experienced by those that have been in military action on the front lines. It's a very, very horrible feeling. But he's smiling. Vritrasura smiling. Hey, where are you going? And he knows more or less he's going to die, because he knows that the weapon of Indra, which is made by from the body of the sage Dadichi, the bones of Dadichi, who is another very great hero. We just read that they asked him for his body. He said, well, you're asking me for my body. The body is very dear to everyone. Nobody likes to give up their body. Then they spoke some religious principle. I was just testing you. Yeah, go ahead, take it. He's also fearless. Not attached to his body, giving it for a higher cause, a more noble cause. This is glorious. It is two heroes. So Vritrasura is the same. he's even more elevated, actually, it appears, than the Dadichi Muni. Because Dadichi has given he's given his life just to keep the balance in the universe, because the devas, they're meant to be controlling the higher planetary systems, not the Asuras. The Asuras control the Bilbaswad. They control down the lower planetary system. So, but here, Vitasura, he's a pure unalloyed devotee. The other one was doing, you know, just a good deed, just a noble deed. But Vitasura, he's gonna preach about, you know, pure devotional service in this next chapter. He's completely unattached. He's smiling. And then they're going to have a big fight. Indra's gonna hurl his famous club, and Vitasura will catch it in his left hand, nonchalantly, like Varahadev, and knock Indra, smash the Indra's elephant, Aravata, and then Indra lose, and then he starts to roar, and the demigods, some of them are fainting just by his roaring. He's so huge and formidable, he's so fearful, just by his roaring sound, they're fainting, and they're getting ready to go also. But all the way through, like Vitasura, then he's speaking like a hero. I'm gonna pierce you with my trident and send you to the abode of wherever. You know, the heroic talk, and he knocks the thunderbolt from Indra's hand. Then Indra just goes to pieces. It's all over now. And then Ritra says, "What are you doing? You pick up your weapon, will you? That's meant to kill me, that weapon. This is destiny. It's by the Lord. The Lord has empowered this weapon. You went to the Lord. He's told you how to. He's given his weapon to kill me. Now pick it up and do your job." Okay? So he's completely unattached to his his position and his body. Any position, good or bad, is indifferent to those, to the positions. Because on the other spiritual platform, it's all the same thing. You know, whether you're wherever you are in the material world, whether you're in heaven or hell, it's the same thing. If there's no service to Krishna, there's no experience in your actual constitutional position, your real life, which is eternity, knowledge and bliss. So anything outside of that, anything away from pure devotional service to Krishna, the association of Krishna in his service, it's irrelevant what it is. As long as there's no service, if there's no service there, then it doesn't matter whether you're in heaven or hell. What's the point? What's the use? You're not able to serve the Lord in either place very well. But here, he's pointing out all these things. Vitasura is criticizing everyone, chastising everyone on every count. The demons, why are you running away? You cowards! This is a glorious time for you. You can attain the heavenly planets. Why are you running away? Don't be foolish. You demigods, why are you so attached to? And he really criticizes Indra. He calls him a low class person, and he's right on every count. He said you killed a brahmana, insulted their guru. You killed a pure brahmana, your priest. You cut his head off like a butcher. He didn't do anything wrong to you. He didn't harm you. Because he was doing some oblations for the demons at the same time as he was doing for the devas. He said you insulted your guru, or you killed your guru, you killed a pure brahmana, and you approached the Lord, and you're still asking for some material benediction. You're so attached to your position in the material world. What's the matter with you? Wake up, will you? It's embarrassing. He's really heavy preacher. And brought them all to their senses. So he's that's why he's a hero. But you see, the others, nobody could actually follow his path, or his take heed from. Nobody was as elevated as Vritrasura was. You know, they were happy to, the demigods were happy to retain their position of sovereignty and carry on with their work, carry on with their life of maintaining the worlds. So that's the difference. Vritrasura has gone back to Godhead. He's in the spiritual world, serving the Lord. And the demigods in the material world, which is always, there's always anxiety here, always fear, and always you always get into trouble as soon as you're desiring to, you know, he's desiring to maintain his position, his birth. You know, he's a great birth. Aristarchus, he's a king, the king of heaven. He's supposed to be intelligent, all the good qualities, opulence to enjoy. So these material opulences or assets that one accrues, sometimes they're a disturbance to pure devotional service. Queen Kunti, when she prays to Krishna, she says, "Krishna, you can be very easily approached. You make yourself very easily available, but only to those people who are a kinchana. Kinchana, or without material possessions, actually material desires. Because even if one is already a devotee, then material possessions aren't a problem, because he's going to use everything in the service of the Lord. So it's not a problem if one is actually on that elevated platform. If one is not on that platform, then they're a little troublesome, because they're attractive. You want to take advantage of those opulences that you can use for your own, for improving your situation and enjoying your life, enjoying your senses. So she's saying that you're very easily approachable. You make yourself, you're easy to approach, but only to those who are materially exhausted. So that's the qualification for pure devotion. If you're not materially exhausted, then you can't sincerely approach the Lord. To the degree that you're attached to the idea of enjoying the situation in the material world, to that degree you can't approach the Lord. Right, Paul says, as much as you give up that the desire to enjoy the material world, that much you can advance. But the more you desire, so it's like a scale, the more you desire to enjoy material, then you're going down spiritually. So you, one or the other, they're supposed to balance each other off. So unless you're actually materially exhausted, then you can't approach the Lord with a very sincere intent. I mean, you could be more sincere. You could be completely sincere if you had no material desires. So that's the kinchana. Though they're pure devotees, they're like that. They have no material desire. Vritrasura is in that category. He has no material. He's not attached to the opulence of Indra, because he could easily kill everyone, you know. he was ready to swallow everyone, the whole universe, right? He was told you can't. It's difficult to kill this person. So he's not attached to the position, even of the king of heaven. And he's not attached to his body. He's not attached to staying alive, which is very, very rare. Nobody wants to die. Nobody wants to leave their body. He's not attached. He's saying, Indra, pick up the weapon and kill me. That's what you're supposed to do. This is the Lord's program. He wants to take me, you know, get out of the material world and take me back to Godhead. You're the instrument to do it. So he's very happy. is happy to go to leave this body behind. So this is that's why he's actually glorious. But none of us would like to leave our body, right? Practically speaking, nobody would like to get the body. Is very dear to everyone. The body is dear because the soul is inside. The soul is actually dear, and the soul is dear because it's a part of Krishna, and Krishna is very dear to everyone. Krishna is all attractive. So therefore the soul is attractive because Krishna is all attractive. And because the soul is in the body becomes attractive. And as soon as the soul leaves the body, then the body is one next moment is not attractive. So it's actually the soul which is the attractive force in the body, in anybody. So that's what we're actually attracted to. We're attracted to Krishna, or Krishna's expansion as the soul in the body. But we're so caught up on these on the external, the whatever's present, whatever's current to our senses, we're so absorbed in that we forget the actual real purpose of existence. We forget who we are. We forget what we're supposed to be doing. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has told very succinctly, Jiva Sarupoi Nitya Krishna Das, that the soul is the eternal servant of Krishna, and that one should engage in the service of Krishna. That is a constitutional position of the soul. So that's satisfaction, that's happiness, that's real life. And anything mixed with that, it becomes artificial, because everything else is temporary. So that's the reality. Here Vitasura is fixed up in these transcendental truths that that we just placed in these bodies according to our karma. According to our karma, we have to rotate in this cycle of birth and death. That's samsara, according to karma. So this is a punishment. Rotating, staying in the world of samsara is a punishment for the free, eternal, living entity, the soul. It's a punishment to be put in this material world, in a material body, and have to suffer old age, disease, death, death, like this again and again in different forms of life. But still, it's so difficult to become free from that concept. Even if you understand it, you've heard it, we have transcendental knowledge, even if you believe it, but when you practice it, when you're trying to put it in practice, then it's not an easy thing to become free from that concept of life, to become free from that endeavor to improve your situation, because the material world, it's a place of suffering, actually is. So we're always trying to improve our situation. Everyone wants to improve all the times like that, to give up that desire to improve our situation so we can actually enjoy it, that's very difficult. So he says, therefore, you can't actually pray to the Lord with full sincerity, because you will still have attachments to something else. So therefore, the Akinchana Gochana, one who has no material possessions, it means one who has no material desires. Then when you don't have that, when you don't want to increase your standard of living, you don't want to make your life more comfortable, and you're not interested in enjoying your senses anymore, that's the platform of purity. And then with the devotion to Krishna, then you can actually serve Krishna with feeling, because you now have no other attachments. So this is what we're at the stage we're as practicing sevaks, practicing bhakti yoga, vaidhi sadhana bhakti. This is the transition that we're going through. So we very well know what a difficult task it is to become free from this bodily idea bodily concept and how to improve our bodily situation. It's very difficult to stop that endeavor, because we've been doing it for millions of births. It's very, very difficult. We know that very well. That's why the stage we're in, most of us, is called anatta nivritti. We're trying to get rid of these anathas, unwanted things. The unwanted things is, how can I improve my existence materially? How can I improve my standard of life, my appearance, my reputation, my happiness? This is always good. We're always looking every moment. Practically speaking, the mind is like this. It's very difficult to catch. Even if you have knowledge of what's going on and what we're supposed to be doing, it's not an easy thing to practice. So here, that's why Vittasura is a hero amongst heroes. Even in such a position that he's in, he could actually annihilate the demigods. Right? They were complaining he was going to swallow them all up. When he threw all their weapons the first time, he opened his mouth, just nonchalantly yawning, swallowed all their weapons. they were told, "Is this demon's formidable?" So he could actually have taken over the heavenly planets, enjoying swaga loka, so the goal of all the karmas. Get to swaga, he could have had that position, the top position in that also. He wasn't interested. Wasn't interested in anything, right? In materials. It's just do your duty, you know, follow the scripture. If you're gonna die a glorious death, you know, you die in yoga, in meditation, or on the battlefield. You've got to die anyway, so this is a way to go, either one of those two. And don't become fearful or hesitant in the course of your duty. I know I'm formidable, but you have to understand, the Lord's on your side, you demigods. You must win. The Lord is on your side. He's sanctioned, he's empowered this weapon. You can't lose. You have faith, will you? Why you stop fighting? Pick the weapon up, you'll see. You don't have faith in the Lord. This way he put everyone to shame, both materially and spiritually, on the devotional line. So it'll be the next chapter will describe all that, such very deep spiritual devotional instructions that he will give everyone, made them all ashamed, make us ashamed when we hear it also, that just see what he wasn't, his position he had, the facility he could have had, you know, it makes our, you know, 100 rupee desires look, you know, really, really foolish. So he gave it up, so he can be our hero also. So otherwise the whole scene is a materialistic endeavor for the demigods against the demons. They're both fighting for control. So they want to enjoy the position above one another. So this is life. This is material life. So within this story. Then Vittasura appears, and Tadichi appears, and the Lord appears. But you see, even though they get all these instructions, they've seen the Lord face to face. So seeing the Lord, some people say, "Yeah, I want to see God." They thinking that if you see God, that's it. Of course, it may be for the yogis who meditate on the Paramatma. But so many people see God. You see, Indra, all the demigods, they saw God. They were talking to him. What did they ask for? They didn't ask to take us back to Vaikuntha, take us back to the spiritual world. They said, "We have a problem in our job here. Please help us. These demons are here. We want to. They're formidable. We need your help. We can't do it by ourselves." And they're satisfied with that position. So even they've heard so much transcendental knowledge, even from the Lord himself. He was also, being sarcastic to the demigods when he was answering their prayers. He was being sarcastic, you know. He's calling them fools, childish, that I'm here and you're asking me for something material. Why didn't you ask me to go back to Godhead? Like, you know, he started to talk about what the pure devotees do and what the impure devotees do. In other words, you're on the other side. So he's given them very clear instructions, and they've understood. Vritasura has given more instruction, they've understood. But what do? They carry on as normal. They're so conditioned by their position, and they go back to being Indravayu and carrying on their material work. They kill the demon, and they say, Jai Jagadisha Hare, Jai Jagadisha Hare, Jai Jagadisha Hare, thank you Lord. And then they carry on again. Vritasura is back to Godhead, Dadichi is probably back to Godhead, and the demons are here waiting for the next trouble to come. And then another problem will come again and again and again. So he's the hero of heroes. So it's my Bhagavatam ki jay. Vritasura, Bhakta Vritasura ki jay. Tago Pramandi.
So, then because after so many chances, saw the Supreme Lord, they had darshan, then later on they got instruction from pure devotee of Vritasura, and still they didn't change their mind. So we can say, what are our chances? We didn't see the Supreme Lord. Many of us didn't mention Prabhupada, the great pure devotee personally. We only have his instruction, maybe his classes like that. So what are our chances to change our mind? What are our chances to change
what are your
our
chances?
Mind?
Well, Indra, he has much more to be attached to than you. His Urvasi is one of his dancing girls. And she's an expansion of Narayan. Narayan. When they tried to break, when Indra sent the apsaras to try to break the penances of Narayan, then he expanded lots of gorgeous creatures from his body. And one of them was, and he said, take one. Because all the heavenly girls were put to shame with the beauty of these others. No, he has so much facility to enjoy. What do you have? You're struggling to pay your rent. You're going up to have to go up to the clinic every once in every month to get some medicine, you know. They don't get sick, they don't get old. It's fantastic life there. I mean, these battles are very rare. It's a fantastic. Is there so much facility to enjoy? And he's so attached to that. And because of that, he forgets. He just gets carried away with that opulence and luxury and easy living. So therefore, and there he does all these horrible things. He's always doing really bad things. Right? Abducting someone's wife. Just to go away. Cutting the head off the priest. Out of fear of losing his position. Forgetting, you know, insulting the spiritual master when the guru comes in. He's so infatuated by this affluence and opulence that he becomes bewildered. But still he doesn't want to give it up. It's such a nice position. It's the best position in the world, materially speaking. What have you got to be proud of? What have we got to be proud of? What have we got to be attached to? So therefore this Bharatraj, this place is said to be very good for spiritual advancement. It's not too good, it's not too bad. It's not too bad, you know. You can stay ahead of the problems. Just about, you know. You just about stay ahead of all the problems. Most people, right? So it's not too bad, and it's not too good. Because, you know, it's not too good. We have to put a fan on. You have to wait, you know, it's not like that heavenly planets. So it's not too good, it's not too bad. So that's considered the best place for spiritual advancement. So we're going back to Godhead anyway. It says that the devas, they want to take birth here, right? They think these humans, they only live 100 years, which is in their calculation 3 months. By following Varnashram, they can go back to Godhead. They think like that. They're anxious to take, and when the Sankirtan movement comes, they're anxious to take birth and here. Gita Nagari Prabhu.
As glorious. Okay. So I'm wondering, does that count for the gruesome Kali Yuga wars that were being fought on behalf of the military industrial complex? Does the benefit still hold true? If you're a courageous soldier in such a war, do you go to the heavenly planets?
I have no idea. I don't know. Because tell you, they're not religious wars anymore. Yeah, I don't know. But whatever you do, there has to be some reaction for it, no doubt. So probably if you're doing your service, you're trying to kill the enemy, you're not running away, you'll get a good reaction. Better than running away anyway.
Hare Krishna. So I was, I've heard something in comparison to this pastime and Arjuna's situation, that Arjuna had, before him, he had the claim to the throne, and yet he was able to walk away from it, or say that he was going to walk away from it, and he was detached enough to do that. That he saw that if he does fight, he's got to kill his guru, Dronacharya, and he's also got to kill his grandfather, Bhishmadev. And he thought that it's not worth doing that for the sake of the kingdom. I was hoping you could elaborate on Indra's situation, because he disrespected his spiritual master, Brihaspati, and then from that he selected another spiritual master, and then from that he slayed that spiritual master, got the bones of Dadichi and so many other things. So is it correct in saying or thinking that perhaps Indra should have at some point just thought, to sort of cut his losses and just think, I'll accept the reactions from perhaps disrespecting my spiritual master or losing the kingdom and not gain further sin?
What was it? What was the question? The last one?
So I'm trying to understand, should Indra have just accepted the karmic reactions of disrespecting his spiritual master and losing the kingdom, and left it as that, rather than trying to gain the kingdom back, to killing another spiritual master, to killing another brahmana, and so many other things, for the sake of retaining the kingdom?
Sometimes he does accept the karma. Sometimes he does accept the results. Other times he runs away and hides for a long time, and other times he's just, you know, caught up in a mode of passion and he doesn't think, like when he cut off the head of Vishru. He's not thinking what he's doing. other times when he insults his guru, he's so infatuated with the palace, with the what's going on in the court, the entertainment going on there, that he's so infatuated with that he doesn't even see his guru. He doesn't notice his guru. When he goes, then he notices. So sometimes he accepts the results, then he gets all eyes on his body and things like that. But he's a very great personality and position, and generally not affected. Just like he was a Himalaya Brahma, they distribute their karma, their bad karma results. You know, they can distribute it to other living entities. So that's how powerful they are. But still, the fact is, he's still enamored by his position. And he gets in a mode of passion, he gets angry quickly, and he makes mistakes.
I was just trying to understand that. Could he have just walked away from the kingdom? Could he have just said, okay, I'll leave it to the demigods?
Well, he could have done anything. He could have done anything, but there was a battle. He wanted, he's a king, he's not going to, he wants to keep his kingdom, naturally. He's attached to that position. So that's the cause of the trouble, his attachment to his position.
My question is in regards to the position. Like Indra, he's so attached to his position. At the same time, we know we're supposed to use our nature or our abilities in the material world in such a way that we get purified from them. So my question is, how do we do that? How do we use, a lot of the times devotees, we take up big responsibility, or we get, and with that comes power, control, prestige. At the same time, they're very very expert at what they're doing. So how do we use our nature and our abilities without becoming distracted by them, and we're able to purify them through that rather than being more attached and getting this, like how Indra is in this situation?
Yeah, that's the art. That's what we got to learn, because you have to act in the world, you see. You have certain duties to perform. So Krishna says you perform your duties, but without attachment. So that's what we have to learn, to do it without attachment. Otherwise, you know, you get position, then that facility comes with position. But you shouldn't, the problem is we get enamored by the position, the control we have, and then the facility that we have to enjoy, which goes with it sometimes. So sometimes we get enamored by that, because that's the purpose of the material energy, Maya Devi, is to distract us by these things, position and happiness. Oh, you know, that's the two main weapons. This is what we're living with in the material world. It's a place of Maya. So that's the expertise. How do you do it? That's what we're learning, how to do it. This is the reality. We're living in life. We have to act. We cannot stop acting. So the results are going to come to us. And how do we deal with those? That's what we're learning. We have to see everything as everything is actually the property of Krishna. So it should be used in his it's for his pleasure, not for my pleasure. Everything and everyone. The position and the ability that got you that position and intelligence, that's also Krishna's. It's also coming from Krishna. I am the ability, I am intelligence, remembrance, forgetfulness. So it's he's actually his potency that we're using, we're dealing with. So we try to see it as if we when there's a test, then you got to be philosophical. When there's a challenge comes, like Cupid or something else, then at that time you got to be philosophical. That's all you got to. That's all you got to have to protect you, an association, because Maya is all powerful in this world. And a business is to distract us by these two things, by offering facility and happiness. That's her business. So we should see that you have to take shelter in the philosophy until we're actually strong enough to overcome that, or the influence is not there. But the influence is always there. Maya, she doesn't get any weaker. She doesn't get any less potent. It's just that our attraction for Krishna, as that increases, then we can become indifferent to Maya. But she never gets any less powerful, and she may even try harder if she sees that we're getting out of her grips. So she may even put on extra stuff. So until there's actual taste or experiencing something higher, Krishna consciousness, then you have to take shelter of the philosophy. That's all. That's what we're doing. That's our business. How to do that? How to not to be influenced by this opportunities to control and enjoy that are offered to us, that we come into at every moment, practically speaking, every moment. You look at this, I see something, oh, that's nice. Nice for what? Yeah, nice if I had it. Nice for me to, right? We don't think we got offer that. That should be used in Krishna service. So that's a conditioned mind, just thinking like that. I like this, I don't like that, I like this. That's its only business. So this is what we're living with. This is our ground zero. We're coming from, our platform is our experience. Experience is, I am this body. Yeah? When you wake up in the morning, you're definitely your body, right? There's no doubt about it. So you've got to depend on philosophy at that time. You're not the body, but for all intents and purposes, you are the body. When the experience comes, you experience it. This is nice, I like this, I don't like that. Even though the actual soul has nothing to do with it. So until there's actual advancement or realization or taste, in from the spiritual side, then it's attractive. There's no doubt. It doesn't become unattractive. Only when you get something better, then you can be indifferent to it. But it doesn't become any less attractive or any less powerful. It's our attraction to it that is causing the bondage. Because what are we attracted to? What she's offering is control, facility, and pleasure. And that's what we want, because the material world is unsatisfactory. It's not very stable here, material world. You got to eat every 6 hours. You got to go to the bathroom. You got to sleep. It's not very satisfactory. So therefore, when you want a little relief, so that Maya gives pleasure. There is some pleasure. There is some comfort, but it's not. You can't hold it. You see, when you're really happy, how long does it last? When you're really satisfied, how long does it last? So it's there, but you can't keep it. You can't live in that situation, because that's the spiritual situation, that's eternal. But this Maya, the material energy, is constantly changing and fluxing. The three modes of nature, competition there to one above the other. So we are constant, and we're in this temporary situation. So this whole kaleidoscope of stuff is going on around us. And we're bewildered about it, though, because we've always been bewildered. And then we go for this color, this sound, this taste, this smell, because that's our conditioning. So now we have to, with knowledge, Krishna says you cut with knowledge, you sharpen the sword with knowledge, you cut this tree of material world down by knowledge and detachment. That's what Mahaprabhu is coming to teach. Gyan Vairagya, knowledge and detachment. Prema is given. You can't teach prema, you can't teach love of God. But he's given that, if you're fortunate. But he's teaching Gyan and Vairagya. So that's what we're... So we have the two principles in ISKCON. We accept what's favorable for Krishna consciousness and we reject what's unfavorable. So this is not a knowledge, means what's favorable, what's unfavorable. That's actually the meaning of knowledge. So now with that knowledge, when Maya's presence is very strong and you start to go, then you discriminate with the intelligence. The mind says, yeah, yeah, wow, go. And the intelligence says, wait, the intelligence discriminate. Is it favorable or is it unfavorable? If it's favorable, go. If it's unfavorable, no go. So now's a test. What are you going to do? You going to go or not go?
That's my next question. So I understand from your answer that ideally we should be performing our duty, engaging our nature for Krishna's pleasure, and we're completely detached from the results and the prestige and facility and everything that comes with it. So when opportunities present themselves, when it is an opportunity for you to engage your abilities, but you're not sure if you're ready to take that on, and it could be a distraction, how do we know when it's favorable, when it's not favorable? No, for our level of understanding, like for where we're at.
No, you don't know. You just said you don't know at that time. So then you discuss with somebody. What do you think? I want to do this, I got a feeling to do this, I think it could work, but, you know, take advice from your senior Prabhupadas. Okay, one last question.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you for a wonderful class. I wanted to know this, that in his previous birth, Chitraketu Maharaj, he was cursed.
I can't hear, sorry.
In his previous birth, Chitraketu Maharaj was cursed to become a demon, so in next birth he became Vritrasura. But still he maintained his own consciousness of a devotee. So I wanted to know why then was he supposed to behave like a demon? Just like Prahlad Maharaj was also in the body of a demon, but still he was behaving as a devotee. So why was he supposed to behave as a demon, killing people and destroying the sages and all such kind of activities?
You can repeat that. Excuse me, my ears are not so good.
He's asking why Vritrasura was, why he had to behave as a demon, although he had consciousness of a devotee. Like Prahlad Maharaj, he was born in a family of demons, but he was behaving as a devotee. Vritrasura was born as a demon also. He had consciousness of a devotee, but he was behaving as a demon. He was killing people and like that, so why he had to follow that?
Why they're demons and acting as devotees?
No, why Vritrasura?
Huh?
Vritrasura.
Vritrasura?
Yeah. Why he had to act as a demon? If his consciousness was the consciousness of a devotee.
So he was created to kill the devotees, to kill Indra. He was created from the fire by the, was it Palasya? By the one sage, forget the name. Huh? Tvasta. He created him because Indra killed his son. His son was also a priest. Indra killed him. So he created this demon to kill Indra. Now, in the next coming chapters, we'll get the background. His previous birth, he was actually a great devotee. But he was cursed to take birth as a demon. So that's why, how this incident happened. In the case of Prahlad, he was instructed by Narada Muni while he was in the womb of his mother, and then he changed, he became a devotee.
He was asking that he was aware that he was Chitraketu in previous life, Vritrasura. He's asking that why he had to act as a demon if he was not a demon. Huh. I mean, externally he was looking like a demon, but he was actually a devotee. Vritrasura.
Vritrasura.
Why he had to act as a demon if he was not a demon?
No, he has to kill the devotees, the devas. His service was to kill the devas, who are devotees. So naturally he was on the side of the demons. He never acted as a demon, no. So anyway, he wasn't attached, that's the thing, whatever body it was, he wasn't attached. He was ready to kill Indra, that was the purpose of his birth. He was ready to do it, but he actually advised Indra, you're supposed to kill me, the program is you're supposed to kill me, I'm not supposed to kill you. Comment. Can't hear it with no mic. You hear the mic?
We ask. I think there is a nice question, nice answer for it, because always the demon. I remember the story when Krishna going to Yamaduta. He's going to Yamapuri and he talked to Yamaraj, because Yamaraj is represent like demons. And he said, your work will remain steady because you are my pure devotee. So, and the demon, always they are pure devotee for Lord Krishna. They are doing the service of Lord Krishna. So even if they say outside body, he was a demon, and inside he was a pure devotee, is right, because Krishna, what can I say in shortly, Krishna stay in each and every living entity, including demons, demigod, everything, because he's a master of playing illusion. So Hare Krishna.
Krishna says there's two classes of people, the devas and the asuras. They came from the same father, some of them, a lot of them, Kashyap. So it gives a little flavor for the material world when you got these, and they both want to be, you know, on top. The demons want to be on top, and the devas, they want to be on top because they're supposed to be on top. So there's always this clash there. There's always these two classes of people. Krishna's created like that. So we don't get, keep us on our toes, you know, keep us moving forward. Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.